Don't wait. Call now.
Planning your vacation?
Chris, what do you want to go on a vacation?
Why not take Pensacola right now with Chris and Austin with you?
We're going to go to the beach.
No, take News Radio along via the app.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Just go to your app store, search News Radio 92.3, download the app.
That's good.
And listen to Pensacola's news leader with crystal clarity wherever you go.
And it's absolutely free.
That's really good.
Get it now and tap the app to get News Radio 92.3, no matter where in the world you are. Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
All right, this is a bit of a complicated one. I'm not quite sure how to ask it, and I know that doesn't happen a lot, but this is the situation. The Supreme Court just recently ruled that race can't be the basis of drawing districts. That's led to, at least in the federal level, at congressional elections. That clearly has implications for us. We have a district, District 3, which was clearly, by requirement of legal case, drawn to make sure that black voters have a representative on ECUA, on the school board, and the county commission. You guys may not be in office, you may, when we have the next census, but this is might be more pressing than that. Do we need to redraw our districts because of that, even if it means not having a black representative? Should we have at-large representation like Santa Rosa County has instead of single-member districts?
Gosh, Andrew, why don't you ask an easy question? So this is at the Forum for Candidates for District 2 and District 4 at the Women for Responsible Legislation Forum that I was hosting. They asked me to host MC last week. And a Calais decision just come down from the Supreme Court, dramatically changing the way the Voting Rights Act, especially Section 2, is allowed to be implemented in districts. Essentially, you have to show historic intentional, not just effectual, but intentional racial discrimination, and you can only remediate that to the degree that it is done to fix what was caused in the past or what has been done. You know, like, you can't draw lines on the basis of race unless you're fixing lines that were previously drawn badly on the basis of race. That's pretty much the only way that works out. But then you also have the question about single member districts versus at large districts. There's kind of a long history here, but let me give you some of their answers, and then we'll talk about what the legal history is, because you got to understand kind of both to know where we're at. Joe Vinson, who is a candidate for District 4, running as an no-party affiliate against Ashley Hoffberger.
Well, first of all, I believe that the case for the Supreme Court was wrongly decided. But obviously we have to follow what they have said. I think that establishing single-member districts was a very important step to achieving better representation in Escambia County and throughout Florida. As a historian, at the start of the 20th century, black people made up almost half of the county, but did not have a single countywide representative until Judge Arno's decision in the 70s. So, I think representation is key. I think the most important thing is having single member districts. I'm concerned that this ruling will issue a movement to go to at large, and I think that would be a mistake. I think as long as we have districting that is appropriate to neighborhoods, then I think we will end up with a good outcome. But it is a difficult topic.
And by the way, I agree with him. I think the Calais decision directly affects whether we are going to be allowed to have a single member voting district in the city. Maybe the city might be a little bit different, but districts 5 and 7 were created for that. But specifically the school board and the county commission, the McMillan decision was specifically about that. And ECUA just follows the county commission. So that's a derivative of the same issue. Ashley Hoffberger on the question of, do we need to redistrict because of Calais? Will we need to abandon single member voting districts as we have in Escambia County because of it?
There was actually a caveat to that ruling, and I believe the number on that was C3. So we are one of the only of two counties in the entire country that it has been determined that we are so racist that we still need to make sure that those lines are in place. So we don't actually fall underneath that, which is a very interesting concept. I will also say that Commissioner May, I believe he was elected because his community believes he is really good at his job. I don't think he was elected based on his race. 30% of his district is minority. That is not the majority of his district. So I think that all of us on the board were elected based on what our community believed that we can do. I will also say that we are one of three counties in the state of Florida that we are only voted on by people in our district. There are many ways that we could set that up. We could keep the dedicated county commissioner and add two at-large positions, which would give a wider view and a more collaborative vision to the entire community.
There are some parts of that that I just believe are factually incorrect. There are, like, there's somewhere between 20 and 23. I wasn't able to count the exact number, but there's not just three. Some of them, I believe, are charter counties, but also several of them, somewhere maybe in the 10 vicinity. Again, I feel like I don't know for sure, but it's well more than three. There are single-member voting districts in the state of Florida, but about 10 of them, I think, were by judicial order. Those would be the most relevant ones. The C3 or 3C exemption thing, I don't think that's correct. I've read what she's talking about, and I don't think that is a correct interpretation of the Calais decision. I do think the Calais decision is going to apply to us precisely because it affects the way the Voting Rights Act works, Section 2, and because that's gone away, that is directly relevant to the legal underpinnings of why we have single-member voting districts. But I'll come back and explain in just a second. PJ has traffic on the fives.
Thanks, Andrew. U.S. 98 and Gulf Breeze between Fairpoint Drive and Shoreline seeing quite a bit of traffic. U.S. 98 westbound past the Naval Live Oaks area also seeing traffic picking up quite a bit. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. And also, and I am going entirely memory. I did not go back and look, but I think she's wrong about the racial percentage. I feel very sure that it was specifically designed to have 50%, but it's my district. You would think I would know, but I could be wrong. I could misremember that. I do not think it's as low as 30%. By the way, Joe Vinson is correct. At the turn of the century, it was more than 50% of the people were black at 1900. Okay, then there was an exodus of sorts, over the next 20 years. Now it's 20% of the county is black. So Mike Kohler is going to answer this question. You know, will the Calais decision affect how we need to draw our boundaries regards to race? Does the single-member voting district as we're currently set up, where you only vote for the only people who vote for you are the people who live in your district, whereas in Santa Rosa, it's at-large, everybody votes for everybody. There's also a hybrid system. That's the idea of having like 5+2 at-large that you could do under the state constitution potentially. But anyway, Mike Kohler.
So the root question is, it's not really about race. It's about political party. So if you look at the five different districts, District 1 and 5 have about 12,000 more Republicans. District 4 has about 10. Lumen's under 9, and he's mostly Democrat. I have the least amount, and the most purple district is District 2 with about 6,000 more Republicans. The lines, as you presented, are drawn on political affiliation. Lumen happens to be black, but it's because he's a Democrat why the lines are drawn. So I don't think you could argue the same thing with Commissioner Hofberger. Should she have 68% of the city? I have 8%. Should Lumen have 24? I mean, we need to look at the lines based on good common sense and how it affects everyone in Escambia County. And that's what I believe.
Which, again, does not directly answer the question I was asking, but that's okay. I know it's a hard question to answer. It's a complicated question. It's largely going to be a legal question if anybody files a lawsuit. Glenn Dorsey, who's running against Mike for District 2, is a Republican.
I guess I see the wider view. I would like to see the lines redrawn.
By the way, wider view, not whiter view. Just in case, I want to make sure nobody hears it wrong.
I guess I see the wider view. I would like to see the lines redrawn every single year throughout the entire county. That way we represent the best interests of the county. Here's what's happening with the districts. District 2 needs to fight for its resources for code enforcement, for law enforcement, for road funding, for park maintenance. We're not serving the best interests of the community when we have individual lines drawn for each particular district. It's who is friends or the better friend with the road department in order to get roads fixed. Who's the better friend with somebody in the park department to get the park fixed there? I am a strong advocate that if we have to have districts and lines, we move them regularly to represent the best interests of this county.
Now, that's an interesting theory. Frequently, almost annually, redrawing the lines. I mean, you don't need to redraw them more than every 2 years because that's when elections happen. But, I would disagree with that. I think the boundary should not be drawn on the basis of it's not a terrible idea, okay? The idea that you draw the boundaries on the basis of what's politically important to them. You know, like waterfront issues, you would think should be almost like waterfront voters should be the ones to control those issues, if you could make it happen that way, I think is kind of what he's getting at. In any case, I did one final follow-up here just to get there. Like, what do you think about the single-member voting versus the at-large districts, which would be Santa Rosa versus Escambia model? And again, there's a really interesting explanation of this coming when I get all done, but I just wanted you to hear the candidates.
I'm not a big fan of the hand-raisy thing, so I'll just ask you verbally, just tell me at-large or single-member districts. So Santa Rosa, you live in the county, everybody votes for everybody, you just have to live in your district. In Escambia, only the people of that district get to vote for you. We currently have single-member districts. Would you prefer Escambia to be at-large or single-member districts? So Glenn, at-large or single-member?
At-large.
Mike, at-large or single-member?
Hybrid.
Hybrid? With additional seats?
Yeah, probably.
How many, two?
Probably two.
Okay.
That's fair.
I didn't offer you the choice. Matthias?
At large.
Okay. Ashley?
Hybrid.
Okay. Joe?
Single member, but I would accept a hybrid situation the way that city council used to have.
Okay. And for those who don't know, a hybrid would mean we'd probably add two seats that would be elected at large in addition to the five single member districts. So thank you for bringing that up. I'd forgotten about that option.
First of all, I cannot believe Matthias Robinson said at large.
Ashley?
Sorry, here.
Okay. Matthias?
At large.
What? The Black Democrat wants to get rid of Black Democrat district? That's, I don't even know what to say about that. But okay, here's the history that you need to know. Because understanding this issue and understanding how we got here is important, understanding what the Supreme Court decision may or may not mean for what's going on in Escambia County. So there was a case called the McMillan case. It was decided by decided by lower courts in the mid-80s, 81, 83 was kind of when it was running through the courts, 84. The Supreme Court was handed a lower appeals court ruling, Fifth Circuit, that said, we find single-member voting districts to be necessary under the Constitution because Escambia County is so racist that they are using their power with at-large districts to exclude blacks from participation. Black candidates can't get elected. They don't have enough of a voting block, and they also cannot overcome the constitutional burden that was put in by racists in the Florida Constitution that says you are going to all be at large unless you have a countywide referendum that makes you single member voting districts. Remember, you know, the Constitution says that you're at large by default. Then you have to have a referendum if you're going to go the other way. Or you like have a charter county can do that too. Yeah, under the referendum, you can go to either single member voting districts like we have or the hybrid system. Those are your choices, but you have to have a referendum. Well, if you can't get your, again, not to be too blunt about it, but if you can't get black people elected in the at large, how are you going to get all the white voters to vote for a system that would allow black people to get, or Democrats? I mean, it was Democrats back then, now actually Republicans. The point is, how would you get them elected? How would you get the referendum passed? You can't. Okay. Fifth Circuit says, that's racist. You've got to go to single-member voting districts to fix this. The Supreme Court said, you answered the wrong question. You answered it under the 15th Amendment and other amendments. You did not answer it under the Voting Rights Act, which is what you should have done first because it's always simpler to assess things on a statutory, Voting Rights Act's a statute, as opposed to constitutional grounds. So they remanded it to the Fifth Circuit, and the Fifth Circuit came back. I just read this opinion again last night. It's very interesting. I don't have the details. I'm not going to tell you all the details, but the short version is, yep, Escambia County is so racist that they, under the Voting Rights Act, are in violation of Section 2. Therefore, they have to have single-member voting districts. And the Supreme Court said, good job. That's right. And they never did decide the constitutional question. What does that mean for us? Well, the Supreme Court decision in Calais dramatically altered the application of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. That means that the legal underpinning for the Fifth Circuit with the Supreme Court to say Escambia County can override the state constitution, which would require a referendum, and force us to have single-member voting districts, has gone away. Meaning, there's no more legal justification for having single-member voting districts. The Constitution says by default you have to have at-large. We should have to have at-large until a court rules that that's unconstitutional on amendment grounds, not on the Voting Rights Act, which has now been undone by the Calais decision. So I'm not a lawyer. I know a lot of them, but I will tell you that based on what I have read and thought about and studied here, it looks to me like if somebody wants to file the lawsuit, probably the right application here is that Calais, in conjunction with McMillan, means that Escambia County has to return to at-large unless we either have a county referendum, which we've never had, or unless the courts make the ruling on the basis of the 15th Amendment, for example, that having single member voting districts is required. And that decision has never been made. So this is utter chaos for us. And likely would produce an outcome where we have neither a black or a Democrat elected to ECUA, school board, county commission, maybe even in the city council, depending on whether those districts need to be redrawn. Because remember, you know, most people in Escambia County are Republicans. Most people in Escambia County are white. Those tend to line up, unfortunately, but they tend to line up. So if we're forced to go to at large, guess who's going to lose representation? Is that a good thing for the county? No, that's probably a terrible thing for the county as an end result. Also, if you run at large, you probably don't need to campaign in your district everywhere. You just need to campaign in the highly populated money areas, which would also change dramatically the nature of elections in Escambia County. So that's where we're at. I don't know what's going to happen, but I wanted you to understand because I, not quite, but almost guaranteed this is going to become an issue and possibly very soon. 725 on News Radio 92.3. PJ has traffic on the fives.
There is a vehicle crash, Spencerfield Road at Berry Hill in Milton. No roadblock associated with that one. Also a vehicle crash, Gulf Breeze Parkway at Oak Hill Road in Gulf Breeze. Saying there's a roadblock there, so just use caution. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. If you have a company, you have employees, you have benefits, you have to manage HR and payroll and health insurance and dental and vision, life, disability coverage, hey, Torgerson Consulting can help you with that. They're good at this. We started using them 5 years ago here at News Radio in Cat Country. They're great. Like Tony the Tiger says, yeah, they're great. Like I love them. They're fantastic. Now, they operate in a marketplace that's terrible. So in giving us the best available plans, the plans are still terrible, but they're the best available. And we have choices that we didn't have before. And we have better customer service than we had before. And, you know, just my wife, who's an industrial engineer and is very detail-oriented and asks questions and is usually unhappy with the quality of answers she gets from most kind of insurance-y type people. She's like, Torgerson Consulting is great. I love them. Two thumbs up. So if you have a business and you want to provide this stuff well to your employees and find out if there might be a way to do it better, give them a call. No obligation. 433-9996 for Torgerson Consulting or online at tcbenefitsgroup.com.
Here's today's Strength for Life.
As Christians, we make much of Jesus' efficacious death through crucifixion, and we make much of his resurrection from the grave, and we should. However, a major moment in the life of Christ that's often overlooked is his ascension. After all, Christ's ascension is his coronation, his exaltation, his enthronement. It signifies mission accomplished and job well done. At his ascension, Jesus is once again seated at the right hand of God the Father, and his enemies become his footstool. On the day that Jesus ascended, two promises were made. Jesus promised that the Holy Spirit would come, and indeed he did powerfully in Acts chapter 2. Secondly, one of the angels promised that Jesus would return in the same way that he was received up into heaven. The ascension is important because it is a reminder that Jesus is coming again. And as Christians, we say with John the Revelator, "Even so, Lord Jesus, come quickly."
For more Strength for Life, please visit our website, strengthforlife.church.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see anywhere in the panhandle of Florida. But it's what you do for people that they don't expect that they remember. The little things that we do, we want to deliver special experiences for you at Bray. We love doing what we do, and we love making people happy. We want every person that walks into the store to feel like you're part of our family. I want everybody to have an amazing experience at Bray Jewelers.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us tomorrow at 9 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
You don't need another money hack.
You need a plan.
Dave Ramsey, weeknights at 7 on News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
I told you I was going to go get her.
In 4 days, Tom.
Our daughter's going to marry a guy she just met millions of miles from home.
Excuse me, did the middle of my sentence interrupt the beginning of yours?
I laughed at that when Julie Roberts said it in Ticket to Paradise, and my wife's like, yeah, would you laugh if I use that on you? Because I'm an interrupter. You would not be surprised to find out. I'd like to think I would laugh at that moment. I don't guarantee it. 729 here on News Radio 92.3. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Good morning. Senate lawmakers are advancing a resolution that would suspend senators' pay during a government shutdown. The lawmakers voted unanimously to advance the measure Wednesday, which would only apply to members of the upper chamber and does not need to be approved by the House or signed by President Trump.
I feel a little bit like, you remember the Eddie Murphy line, you know, about Stevie Wonder. You want to impress me, take the wheel. You know, like, you want to impress me, give up the pay. Don't just suspend it for 3 months or whatever. So go on.
Well, major U.S. beef producers can start exporting beef to China again. On Thursday, China renewed export licenses for hundreds of beef processing plants in the U.S. Reuters says over 400 U.S. beef plants had lost their export eligibility.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. Oh, somebody says about the voting, right? What commissioner would vote to dilute their own power by adding commissioners in an at-large setting? I don't know. Sort of like those school board members who would vote not to appoint the superintendent. It's weird, right?
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. During the state dinner in China, President Trump described the tone of his chat with his Chinese counterpart.
Extremely positive and productive conversations and meetings today.
He then invited President Xi Jinping to the White House September 24th. The leaders did speak about issues ranging from fentanyl to preventing Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon and keeping the Strait of Hormuz open. Plus,
a foreign affairs spokeswoman wrote, President Xi stressed to President Trump that the Taiwan question is the most important issue in China-U.S. relations. If it is handled properly, the bilateral relationship will enjoy overall stability.
White House correspondent Aisha Hosni traveling with the president and House Democrats gathering today for a special meeting on redistricting. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 731. News Radio 92.3. We've got sunshine this morning, looking like the start to a very nice day. We'll get a look at our forecast in just a few minutes. A Molino man facing a felony charge after allegedly leading deputies on a high-speed motorcycle chase and ditching drugs in a construction zone. Deputies say 34-year-old Spencer Ray Stokes sped through a red light and made evasive maneuvers and eventually parked his bike behind a house that is under construction near Kane Avenue and walked away. A canine search along the path Stokes had taken turned up the motorcycle keys and a folded dollar bill containing oxycodone pills. Stokes was arrested and released on $5,000 bond. Five young pianists from Santa Rosa County will be performing at Carnegie Hall in New York City June 10th after earning top finishes at the Gulf Coast Steinway Music Competition. The students, ages 8 through 11, all study at Minds on Music on Gulf Breeze Parkway. And school director Kelly Coach told the News Journal that the students have worked incredibly hard and she is beaming with pride watching them prepare to take the world's most famous stage. Well, Senator Ashley Moody asked Milton Police Chief Jennifer Frank to represent the city in Washington during National Police Week. And by the time she got there, she was actually speaking for the whole state of Florida. City Manager Ed Spears told the Milton City Council earlier this week that he couldn't resist slipping a little something extra into her bag before she left.
I snuck into her travel portfolio a list of projects we need money for. So hopefully she will get some one-on-one time with our senator to discuss those things.
Frank gave her a speech on Tuesday on behalf of Florida law enforcement leaders. That was her first day in Washington for the National Law Enforcement Week. Photos from that speech are posted on the Milton Police Department's Facebook page. She was invited by Senator Moody specifically to represent Milton. The Transportation Planning Organization meets Wednesday morning in Pensacola at the Bayview Community Center, and, well, their vote could affect how quickly Highway 90 gets funded. The TPO's priorities guide the FDOT work plan. All five Santa Rosa commissioners are voting members of that body. Milton Mayor Heather Lindsay is planning to attend the meeting, and she's encouraging residents to reach out to their commissioners before the vote. Preservation of Pensacola's history is underway. News Radio's Chris Bryan with this report. He says monuments are deteriorating and in need of some fixing.
UWF is leading the restoration of five 100-year-old burial markers at Pensacola's Magnolia Cemetery. WUWF is reporting that the work is funded by a $50,000 state grant. and focuses on vernacular markers crafted by local artisans in the early 1900s. Preservationists say the monuments are deteriorating and are in need of repair before they're lost. Chris Bryan, News Radio 92.3.
Well, Florida seems to be making some progress in the war on fentanyl. That's according to Governor Ron DeSantis yesterday. He said there's been a significant decline in fentanyl and opioid-related deaths across the state. Data from FDLE shows fentanyl and opioid-related deaths each dropped more than 40% from January through June 2025. All drug-related deaths were down almost 20%. 735. And let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with PJ.
Thanks, David. U.S. 29 southbound between Roberts Road and 9 Mile, seeing quite a bit of congestion, so just give that car in front of you a little bit more space. Also, a vehicle crash Gulf Breeze Parkway at Oak Hill Road in Gulf Breeze. They're saying there's a roadblock associated with that. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
We will be seeing sunny skies today with a high near 84 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 62. For Friday, mostly sunny skies, high near 82. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 63. Keeping sunshine around on your Saturday with a high near 82 degrees. And Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 68 degrees. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And we've got sunshine, 69 degrees right now. Your next news at 8. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Air India is scaling back international flights between June and August. The airline said it is cutting nearly 140 flights per week, which roughly translates to 27% of its total international flights. Indian carriers have been among the worst affected since the start of the conflict in the Middle East. U.S. beer sales have dropped more sharply than expected, and soaring gas prices may be to blame. Investors on Wall Street have been worried that spiking energy costs will result in consumers pulling back on discretionary spending. Nielsen Track Data says beer, flavored malt, and cider volumes fell 6.3% year-over-year through the week ending May 2nd. Lotus officials told CNBC that it could be yet another decade before the hype over solid-state batteries delivers on its promise. They added that they do believe there is still a long time to go before they could achieve the mass production of such technologies. Futures are moderately higher, with all eyes on the Iran war. Dow futures up by more than 300 points. That's Your Money Now.
Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. Whether it's the style and performance of the all-new 2026 Outback or the extraordinary mileage of the 2026 Forester Hybrid, your next Subaru is guaranteed to put more scenery in your scenic route. The iconic Subaru Outback has been completely redesigned with sharper lines and more edge, making it look as tough and rugged as it drives. And the Forester Hybrid, with a driving range of up to 581 miles per tank and up to 40% better city fuel economy, will let you hit the road again and again and again. Both come standard with Subaru's legendary symmetrical all-wheel drive to help you take every journey with confidence. The all-new 2026 Subaru Outback and the 2026 Forester Hybrid. Love never looks so good. Get your next Subaru at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola, or online at AndersonSubaru.com. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services. Advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at Georgetown Technical College, on the Pensacola Expert Panel tomorrow at 10 a.m. Key Marine Center is sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service Technicians, they hire students from Georgetown Technical College. It's a dream team, so join them tomorrow at 10 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Planning your vacation? Why not take Pep Talk with Meg with you?
A vacation? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I can't wait to go. Okay, where are we going to go first?
No, take News Radio along via the app.
Oh.
Just go to your app store, search News Radio 92.3, download the app.
Okay.
And listen to Pensacola's news leader with crystal clarity wherever you go. And it's absolutely free.
That'll work.
Get it now and tap the app to get News Radio 92.3 no matter where in the world you are.
Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us now, we have Mike Wood, who is the Public Information Officer for your Pensacola Police Department. Mike, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good to have you. Good to have you. So people just can't seem to stop themselves from breaking into the old Baptist Hospital. Is that right?
Can you believe it? I think we're like 8-0 on this. People should understand that when you go and try to break into that property, that you're going to get caught. And I'm not going to talk about how that happens, but it happens. And it's usually juveniles looking for things to take. There's some sort of treasure in there that they must have, but they're going to get caught. So, that problem's going to solve itself soon. But in the meantime, we just want people to stay beyond the fence. It's up for a reason, and to stay out of those buildings.
It's the ever-popular Old Baptist Hospital trophy that they're trying to acquire for their collection. I guess, are you guys using it as like a bait hospital now, like to try to entice them to... Why is it so popular?
No, we don't have to do anything. It's just, I guess it's an attractive nuisance maybe to some people, but there's, you know, it can be obviously dangerous in
right.
there, and it's not theirs. It's not their stuff to steal, so we just want people to stay out of there.
You've also got a motor vehicle burglary that was interceded with. Is that right?
Yeah, that was last Friday night in the 100 block of Escalona. There were three individuals that were breaking into vehicles. One owner saw this, called police, and officers arrived on the scene. Two of them took off. A third one also ran, but was tracked down by K-9 Officer Jones and Officer Abed, and they were able to locate that one suspect. So we've got two more outstanding on that, but a good job on the track with Officer Abed and K-9 Jones on that one.
And these are, I'm sorry, you might have said, but juveniles, adults who don't know?
Juveniles.
Okay. I mean, yeah. Juveniles are pretty big territory, 13, 14, 15, or like 16, 17, 18, because this is something we talked about a lot is, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't have exact ages on them, but yeah, most of the time it is in that late teen, early 20s area when we see those things.
And I'm assuming that they were not breaking into cars; they were instead just looking for open doors and then trying to steal the cars that were open or stealing stuff out of those cars. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the first thing they're going to do is pull on those door handles, and that's why we say until we're blue in the face, please lock the doors. But sometimes there's things left out in the open in plain sight that and the car is locked, and that's when the window usually gets punched.
You also had a fatality on Creighton Avenue, also on Friday. A lot of weird stuff happening on Friday, right?
Yeah, this was late Friday on Creighton Road. It was near Walmart where a single vehicle rollover crash occurred, and unfortunately the single occupant, it was a 22-year-old male, passed away at the scene. So we're still investigating that one to find out what the factors were, what the cause was on that. But it's sad to say we've just had way too many fatalities in the city of Pensacola this year and last year. And Mayor Reeves and Chief Winstrom and a lot of folks are looking into this, trying to find a way to get those numbers back down to where they were.
So,
which is, one is too much,
yeah.
But they were a lot lower in years past.
Okay, so just a question. You said single vehicle fatality, and that's by, like, the Walmart. Are they going eastbound or westbound? Because I drive that road all the time, so.
Yeah, it looks like they were coming from 9th Avenue going westbound. So I don't know if they came from Creighton or came from 9th Avenue. That's still under investigation.
Okay, but, like, speeding, we don't know. Like, it's a weird thing to happen, right? I mean, I understand if you run into another car, but unless you're going really fast or something like that and you're reckless driving, it's such a big, wide, safe road. That's why I ask.
Yeah, it is. And looking at the damage on the vehicle, it looks like speed may have played a part in that. Again, that's something that's under investigation. But when you say speed, sometimes there's other factors that can come into play there. But
like impairment,
say that for sure is something I can't do at this point.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. We're talking to Mike Wood. He is public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, I did want to have a conversation with you. Two things. One is, sometimes I bring up a topic with all three of y'all. I talk with the sheriffs and talk with you, of course. And sometimes I bring it up with all of you because it's relevant to all of you. But in this case, it's because USA Today Network here, Gannett Network here in Florida, and through the PNJ ran a report about Florida Highway Patrol and the allegation that they are searching black drivers' vehicles at a disproportionately high rate compared to white drivers' vehicles getting searched. And I think it's important for people to know that in Pensacola, for a long time, you guys have had a very robust system of tracking all of this data to make sure that there isn't some inappropriate or disproportionate racial bias in this, right?
Yeah, we've had that for years. It's TD, traffic stop data recording, to where we enter information on why we've stopped the vehicle, the occupants, the demographics of the occupants, everything, their age, how many were in the car, and if there were any charges, if there was warnings. There's a lot of information there that's entered on each and every traffic stop. And if something was happening to where an officer was picking on a certain race or age or a certain kind of vehicle, that would stick out like a sore thumb very quickly and could be addressed.
All right, we'll come back to this in a second because I have a follow-up. But we're talking to Mike Wood, PIO for the Pensacola Police Department. PJ has traffic on the fives.
There is a vehicle crash with injuries, Gulf Breeze Parkway at Oak Hill Road in Gulf Breeze. They're saying there's a roadblock associated with that. Also have a listener report of a tree being down, West Jackson Street closed east of 61st. So if you're in that area, just find an alternate route. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. Back to Mike Wood, the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, when I was talking to Sheriff Simmons about this on Tuesday, he made a comment that made a lot of sense to me, which is, you know, as somebody who cares about statistics and math and data, I know that you've got to be very careful about how you interpret things because a small miss in understanding the context of a number can lead you to a terrible misunderstanding of that number. He was making the point that a lot of times it might be that a particular police officer or a sheriff's deputy is assigned to a beat that is a disproportionate race, and which, of course, is true because some neighborhoods are more black or more white or whatever. And that can wind up influencing things like, you know, traffic stop or search data. I assume that same kind of thing can be an influence on the data when it comes to PPD, right?
Oh, absolutely. You can have an officer that's very active, that's very proactive in a neighborhood, and it looks like that officer is picking on people. Whereas if you put an officer over there that's not as proactive, and I don't want to use the word lazy, but one that just answers calls and does the bare minimum, then you're not going to see that from that officer. So there's a fine line in there. You have to look at the data and make a decision based on that. And again, if it's looking like that a certain demographic is getting targeted, then it sticks out and we're able to address that.
And the other part of this that I think is important, and I know we've seen like what the LA City Council has done to vote to recommend to their police advisory board that they eliminate any pretextual stops, you know, traffic or lights being out, tint on the window, broken windshield, all of that kind of stuff. You know, going through a stop sign, I guess, I don't know, the speeding, minor speeding. Anyway, there's a whole list of things. But so-called pretextual stops where you have a legitimate legal reason in stopping them, if you then have an additional reason to suspect there's a crime and then you conduct a search and you find something, I mean, pretextual stops are invaluable when it comes to policing. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. And we've had a lot of serious crimes solved because of that. In fact, if you remember, Ted Bundy was arrested in Pensacola because of a light being out. So that's very important, but we're going to have a legal reason to stop that vehicle. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, it was a license plate light. Who cares? Well, there's a statute. It's a legal reason to stop a vehicle. But a lot of times a vehicle is suspicious in an area. And we're going to stop that vehicle or follow that vehicle for a while. And if they find a light out or the driving pattern, there's something wrong with that, they're not able to maintain their lane, then they're going to get stopped. And things can go from there. But if there's nothing in the vehicle, nobody's committed a crime, then that's going to be a very short traffic stop.
Very good. We're talking to Mike Wood, the public information officer for PPD. The other thing I wanted to talk with you about, Mike, is the report that opioid deaths, overdose deaths from fentanyl in particular, are significantly down from last year, which is, I mean, thank God. You know, if we were at 100,000, now we're at 70, and 45 of those or so, 1,000 of those are from fentanyl. I mean, that's people are alive, okay? Unfortunately, from my perspective, unfortunately, it looks like maybe the reason is because they're using alternate drugs that don't carry as much risk of death, like xylazine and this one metamidine, I think is how you say it, or something like that. But also because maybe they are using fentanyl in a different way. They're maybe smoking instead of injecting, and I don't know why that would be easier to regulate, but apparently it is. In any case, what are you guys seeing? I assume you're seeing the same thing here in Escambia County, but are you seeing a shift in consumption to go along with that reduction in overdoses?
Yeah, so before I get started, excuse me, why it's happening, we can't put a finger on that just yet, but I can tell you that the deaths are down. I know that there was a time in a year ago, maybe a little bit further back than that, that it was hard for a day to go by without someone being found deceased in a vehicle in Pensacola or Escambia County. It was that bad. And I guess sooner or later, maybe the word gets around, and they were buying drugs off the street from people they didn't know, that there was no way to know what was in it. They just needed that quick fix, and it was killing them. So word gets around, and maybe they're finding other drugs or other ways to not buy things off the street that they simply don't know what they were injecting. So the numbers are down, but as to why, that's something we just can't point to yet 100%.
And the fentanyl test strips is another thing. What I've read is that, you know, more people are using those, and that's a way of defending themselves against unintentional fentanyl poisoning, which is, again, that's, you know, I hate the fact that they're using drugs, illegal drugs, dope is dope, but I'm glad that we're able to at least, you know, keep people alive. Plus the CORE program. I mean, I know that's been effective in Escambia County, and of course EMS in Escambia covers the city too, so you know, getting opioid users off of those things is also, you know, all of these things work together, and you know, the collective result will take the win for that. Last thing, just because I think it's kind of an entertaining story, a couple of weeks ago you and I were having some horrific phone problems. It kept dropping, you kept calling back, kept dropping, you kept calling back, which was, you know, not great for the radio, but it turns out maybe there was a benefit to this because you were live out of a training class for sheriffs and police PIOs in Miami, if I remember correctly. Is that right?
Yeah, we had a bunch of brand new PIOs in the room. It was decided that since I had to step out of the room to do this this interview with you, I was asked, hey, can you do it in front of everybody and see, they can see what this is like. And if things were going fine until the calls began to drop. And when they did, that's something that neither one of us had any idea was happening. I certainly didn't know. The class didn't know. And we handled it. And we always try. And I told them that we have a rule that if this happens three times, we're not going to call back a fourth time. So after that was over with, it was an hour-long discussion afterwards on how to handle things that go wrong, whether it's on a phone or a live press conference or a live interview, how to handle these situations when they go wrong. And that was something that was not in the curriculum, that it will be now from now on. And they've asked me next year when we hold this class and I do the interview with you to once again do it in front of the class.
Oh, nice. So now I'm a training feature. I love
yes,
it.
You are.
Oh, man, be careful what you wish for.
Well, you've got a year to prepare for it, so that scares me.
That's, oh, man, that's fun. Because you know me, we're friends, and I sometimes ask you off-the-wall things, and I feel like I got to, you know, put my tie on and be respectable or something with these folks. That's great. No, I love that that led to a conversation and opened up an opportunity to talk about, you know, crisis response in a crisis, so to speak. So that's great. All right. Mike Wood, he is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department and genuinely one of the best at doing that job anywhere, period, hands down. I'll put him up against anybody. Mike, thank you so much for the time, always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, sir.
7:53 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you've got a roof that has a problem and you suspect or know about it, and now you're not sure, do I need to replace it or do I need to just repair that portion? A good question. I certainly don't know the answer for you, but the folks at Quality Roofing Solutions will. And Brian Ward and his folks have been there for some 20 years. They've done 10,000 roof replacements. They also do repairs. It's about 10% of their business, 90% replacement, 10% repair since 2006. 4.9 rating on Google, so extraordinarily high rating for a company. But they'll talk to you about what makes more sense. And, you know, it might sort of make sense just to do the repair, But when you factor in that maybe within the next 3 or 4 years you're going to have to replace anyway, maybe the mobilization costs mean that it actually makes more sense to replace now because that'll be a cost savings to you. Plus, if you have an older roof that has wind issues and you can do a wind mitigation inspection report, you might actually save more money on net than you're spending. I mean, just the point is they'll talk to you about that. And they'll figure out and help you figure out what's the best answer for your situation. And they won't talk down to you. And they won't, you know how a lot of times you feel like contractors are going to try to, get their way with you. Like, that's just not how they do business. They're there to help. Customer service is their real emphasis, even down to little things like tracking the individual supplies that they use on your project with the van that shuttles between the warehouse that's here and your house with a scan in and out code so that, every piece of wood and every nail basically gets scanned in and out so you know exactly what gets used or what gets returned from the job site so you're not overcharged. Like, it's all those little things that make them do such a great job. QualityRoofingSolutions.com, 777-0961. Traffic on the fives now. PJ.
Still working that vehicle crash with injuries, Gulf Breeze Parkway at Oak Hill Road in Gulf Breeze. They're saying the roadway is now clear. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Whether you want to start your education or advance your career, Pensacola State College is the place for you. Join the 91% of PSC students who graduate loan-free and select from over 100 programs, ranging from career certificates to baccalaureate degrees. In addition, Pensacola State has over 300 scholarships to choose from, including cybersecurity. Register today for the summer and fall semester. Go to pensacolastate.edu. That's pensacolastate.edu to learn more.
Hey, hey, Pensacola pet parents. Got questions about your fur babies? Well, I'm Dr. Mark Sprayberry, owner of Olive Branch Pet Hospital. I would like to invite you and your friends to tune in to the all-new Pet Talk, where I'll be answering all your questions live on air.
Tune in today at 10:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. It's another gallery night, Friday evening in downtown Pensacola from 5 till 9. This month, celebrate Fiesta Italiana. Saturday and Sunday from 9 till 6, check out the Asian Pacific American Festival at the Phil-Am Cultural Center on West Oakfield. Experience the sights, traditions, and flavors of Asia and the Pacific during this family event. Free admission. See philampicola.org for more. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
When storms pop up fast, it helps to already know where to go.
We've got all the details.
News Radio 923. Informative, local, dependable.
This is very controversial. Does anyone know what Vice President Bush called this in 1980? Anyone? Something D-O-O economics. Voodoo economics.
Oh, man. Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, my favorites. Just kidding. I mean, they're fine. Made a lot of good movies and also not some. Anyway, they're getting sued now by South Florida police officers who say that a movie that is coming out is too close to actual cases that had to do with those officers, but that lie and distort about those officers in a defamatory way, portraying them basically as criminals when they're not. I do not think that based on a true story or a work of fiction, none of that gets you out of full liability for defamatory portrayals. And I think this will be a very interesting case to see how this plays out. 7:58 on news, especially since the movie consulted with an actual Miami cop of the era in making the movie that is sort of but not exactly based on events with these people. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David, well, thanks for putting me in the submarine there for a second.
Yeah, I thought you might enjoy
that. Periscope. One ping only. Go ahead.
Governor DeSantis has confirmed that Alligator Alcatraz is going to be closing soon, Andrew. DeSantis gave some remarks Wednesday at a press conference, defended the immigrant detention facility that opened last summer, of course, in the Everglades there. Apparently, it cost about $1 million a day to run that facility.
But will my week I booked for next fall still be available?
Yeah, I think they'll have the rooms available now for
right,
sure.
Just,
yeah,
just checking. All right, gone.
All of the detainees there are going to be moved in coming weeks. No word on the deportation depot, and I don't think they ever even opened the Panhandle Pokey. So,
unfortunately, it did not happen. That's correct.
Didn't, yeah. Nashville police have released body camera video showing an unexpected,
I like unexpected. That's when somebody fixes a wall in a way you didn't anticipate.
This would be a great job if only I could talk. An unexpected act of help during a violent traffic stop. Authorities say police officer Peter Kinsey was struggling with a suspect when a British police sergeant who was there on vacation stopped and helped to pull that violent suspect off. Nashville police say they are considering formal recognition for that man's actions.
It completely made me forget the other joke I was going to make, and now I don't know what it was. Oh, well. This is the stuff that happens every once in a while. David, thanks so much for the update. Oh, on the podcast, we have an interesting conversation about redistricting in Escambia.
Local news every hour and breaking news when it matters most. News Radio 92.3 WNR.